6.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As the 2014 deadline for President Obama's Affordable Care Act approaches, one of the biggest decisions states are making is whether or not to accept federal dollars to expand Medicaid as a way to cover more people. Here in New Hampshire, we're still in the undecided category. Governor Maggie Hassan and the Democratic House both favor the idea and cite studies showing how much the Granite State would benefit. However, last week, the Senate Finance Committee voted against Medicaid expansion. Republican leaders there offered other reports, which they said cast doubt on the concept, and also said they didn't trust that the federal government would come through with the promised money. After this committee vote, the full Senate will soon have its say on Medicaid expansion. Even if it says no, the issue could still become part of broader budget negotiations with the House and governor. Today in The Exchange, two paths on Medicaid expansion. It's a major decision for the state, and we'll look at the possible impact of choosing yes and choosing no. And let's hear from you. What do you think? Should New Hampshire allow more residents to qualify for this program or not? What could be the upside of doing so? What might be the downside? And are there other options that would accomplish the same goal? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have four guests with us in studio. Bill O'Brien is here, Republican representative from Mount Vernon. He sponsored a bill this year in the House that would have blocked Medicaid expansion. And Representative Brian, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Andy Sanborn, Republican senator from Bedford, chair of the Commerce Committee. He also serves on the Capital Budget and Health and Education and Human Services Committee. And Senator Sanborn, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
As always, thanks so much.
And also with us, Tom Sherman, Democratic representative from Rye and Newcastle, member of the Health, Human Services and Elderly Affairs Committee. He's also a physician. And Representative Sherman, good to meet you and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us, Tess Stack Kinning, Executive Director of Bi-State Primary Care Association, an organization that promotes access to primary care in New Hampshire and Vermont. And Tess, good to meet you too, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Well, and all of you, before we get started on whether to expand, whether not to expand, let's just remind everyone what Medicaid's all about. And Tess, I am going to turn to you first. The basics of Medicaid, please. Who's covered? Who isn't? And how this is a shared responsibility between the state and federal government.
Right. Thank you, Laura. Medicaid started in 1965. It is a state and federal partnership. Every state has a different match that the federal government gives with regard to the resources. New Hampshire is about 50%. It predominantly covers, in New Hampshire, low-income children and pregnant women. That represents around 60 to 70% of the population, but it also covers low-income elderly and disabled.
The
services that you get include primary care, specialty, hospital, lab, x-ray, home health, the whole gamut of what you need in terms of the continuum of care.
So it's basically health insurance coverage for people whose incomes are so low that they really just could not afford this on their own.
Right, right.
And they don't get it through work.
Right. For low-income children and pregnant women, it's 185% of poverty, which is around $21,000 a year. And for disabled and for the elders, it's actually less than 100%. It's about 76% of poverty. So you have to be making less than $11,000 a year order to be eligible.
It's for very low income.
Right.
Then.
Each state has their own eligibility levels. I work both in Vermont as well, and the public programs in Vermont go up to 300% of poverty for adults, pregnant women, children, and elders. So states make a decision about how they want to manage their Medicaid program.
Okay, great. And I'm sure a lot more basic questions, Tess, will come up as we go along.
Thank you.
Representative O'Brien, on that shared responsibility piece, how big a role does Medicaid play in the overall New Hampshire state budget?
Oh, at this point, I think it's a little under, and Senator Sanborn helped me out on this, a little under $1 billion over the biennium.
Actually, over at this point, $1.4 billion, about 137,000 people as a statistical average, but it ramps up to about 156.
Yeah, 137 at any given point during the year.
Correct.
So it's 10% of the budget, Representative O'Brien. So a key concern for lawmakers like you who like to keep an eye on the bottom line.
Yes. That's correct.
Yeah, and you sponsored this bill earlier this year, again, that would have blocked Medicaid expansion. And we'll get into the whys and what fors in a minute, but I'm guessing that a lot of your opposition was budgetary.
It is. I mean, expansion is unaffordable. It's expanding a broken system. It would be ineffective to achieve the result, which is intended to cover it insured. At this point, Medicaid on its own nationally is going to grow 120% in costs over the next 10 years. And what the federal government's offering to do is to borrow $1 trillion, give it to the states to expand a system that is in many ways worse in its health care outcomes than having no insurance at all. So it's something clearly we shouldn't be doing.
And we'll definitely get into the details this hour. Representative Sherman, health providers like you, I have heard, often say Medicaid doesn't cover the full cost of care, that doctors and hospitals have to make up what the feds and the state governments don't cover. How does that work, Representative Sherman?
When a patient walks into our office, literally, I don't have any idea what their insurance coverage is. So it doesn't matter whether they're Medicaid or Blue Cross Blue Shield. The statement that Representative O'Brien just made, at least from a provider standpoint, and we are on the front lines, is just not true. I'm sure that he'll be citing a University of Virginia study that compared the outcomes for Medicaid versus the uninsured, but those are two completely different populations, especially when you look at the population of Medicaid patients. The elderly make up the vast majority of the utilizers of Medicaid, and the life expectancy of the elderly is, of course, much lower than the uninsured. The bulk of the uninsured are a population of people who are young, working, and that would be the target audience for Medicaid expansion. So when we look at the typical Medicaid expansion candidate, we're looking at somebody with an income of around $17,000 a year, working. And I actually have several patients in this category. I think of two off the top of my head, one with hepatitis C, which is a viral infection of the liver, who actually has a potentially curable disease, but there is no capacity under current reimbursement to actually treat her or even afford the labs that would monitor the progress of her disease. Another one with Crohn's disease, which is an intestinal and inflammatory disease, who we met in the hospital when he presented to the hospital. He has a family. He had a job. But the pattern without treatment and without being able to afford any of the treatment is one of hospitalization, getting a little bit better, and then being rehospitalized, not being able to afford outpatient visits or health or medications that would actually keep the disease under control.
So Crohn's and many other illnesses, a lot more manageable right. When you've got access to regular
right.
care. Senator Sanborn, I want to bring you into this too. The Senate Finance Committee, as I said, voted not to expand Medicaid and instead to study the impact of expansion. As you know, there have been several studies on this already, the Lewin Group consultants, the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. So lots of folks have already dug into this. What more do you need to know?
Well, Laura, thanks for the question. And you're right. There have been a lot of organizations that have, quote, as you said, kind of dug into Medicaid expansion. But most of them have really talked more about the universe itself and where it exists and where it might be. You know, the Senate position and our questions are more, we need to consider how to do it. You know, today there's about 30 states who have yet to say yes, who are like us, are considering what we should do. And there are many different potential opportunities if we decide to do it. Should we look at that money as a block grant? Should we look at it as a voucher system? Should we look at it as insurance premium support to take that uninsured population and maybe put them into the healthcare exchange? So, you know, for us, it's more of a baseline level. If we're going to consider Medicaid expansion in New Hampshire, and frankly, this is one of the failures of the legislature on both sides so far. And so we in the Senate have recognized that we need to step back. We need to look at the many different ways it could be implemented and study them to see which is the best way for New Hampshire. You know, and again, I want to point out the Senate didn't say no specifically. We just said, look, it's complex.
A lot of people are taking it, though, as a no, Senator Sanborn.
Well, and in all honesty, if it was no, I think we would have said no versus let's bring people together and study it. You know, we've got the sixth highest cost of Medicaid money in America. Six highest costs of this 137 person universe we're dealing with today. And again, we're seeing all these other states look at different ways to try and make sure we're spending people's tax money wisely and efficiently. And if there are better ways to make an implementation more affordable and more efficient, I would think we would all agree we'd want to look at it versus just kind of leaping off the cliff.
Tess, I want to ask you about a couple of the critiques that Representative O'Brien brought up. And the big one that I have heard is that, look, we're expanding a broken system, a system that isn't working that well to begin with. I wonder what you think about that.
I couldn't disagree more with that characterization of Medicaid. Our community health centers see a predominantly uninsured and Medicaid population. And when you look at their health outcomes, they're actually as good or better than HEDIS measures, which is the commercial population. And if you recall when I was talking about who the Medicaid patients are, these are folks that are really low income. These are people who are working two or three jobs to try to make ends meet. These are people who have to punch a clock to get into work. That have there are people working in the retail. There are people that are working in the laundromats and our hotel industries. These are school bus drivers and people, construction workers. So there are friends and our neighbors, and I think to characterize it as a sort of a broken system is really sort of quite unfortunate. It's actually quite a good system, and it with the 60 million people in the United States that are uninsured, we have 170,000 people here in New Hampshire that don't have insurance coverage. And what Medicaid expansion would do is it would bring in the resources to affect 60,000 people to give them access to primary care coverage, to be able to see a GI specialist. And that's just the human side of it. There's an economic side of it as well. It brings in $2.5 billion of federal resources. We're at a precipice right now that we can have the greatest change in terms of job creation and economic growth and revenue growth for a statewide economic impact that's ever been before us. And it would be really quite unfortunate to say to low-income families that this is not worth it when the $2.5 billion is available and ready for New Hampshire to actually receive.
Okay, and I can see everybody wants to jump in. We will be right back after a short break.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. New Hampshire weather is sunny today. Highs ranging from 85 across the North Country, 85 to 90 in the Lakes region, to near 90 across parts of southern New Hampshire. Mostly clear overnight with some patchy fog developing in areas. Lows from 55 in the North Country to 60 for the Lakes region, 60 to 65 over southern New Hampshire. Mostly sunny, hot tomorrow. Highs 90 to 95 degrees. NHPR Daily Weather Report made possible with support from Public Service of New Hampshire. More on the muddle over Medicaid on The Exchange than a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the future of the Republican Party. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dana-Farber New Hampshire Oncology Hematology in Londonderry, bringing Dana-Farber's expertise closer to you. DanaFarber.org/Londonderry. And Concord Motorsport, an independent source for the service of BMW, Mini, and other fine Euro imports, a service alternative for 40 years. Route 4 Chichester and ConcordMotorsport.com.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the Granite State debate over Medicaid expansion. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email. TheExchange@NHPR.org is the address, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We're looking at this fundamental question: should New Hampshire allow more residents to qualify for Medicaid or not, as envisioned by the Affordable Care Act? What do you think would be the upside of that decision? What might be the downside? And as Senator Sanborn has raised, are there other options that would accomplish the same goal as expanding Medicaid that we're not looking at yet? The number again, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And I want to let everybody jump in on some of the points that Tess brought up just before the break. And to you first, Representative O'Brien, she not only made the health care argument that this would cover more people, but also that it would bring in $2.5 billion of federal money, an economic benefit there as the healthcare industry expands to accommodate new people, as there's more money in the system overall. What do you think about that?
I think when the only justification for a program is that it spends taxpayers' money, there isn't sufficient justification for that program. Look, at you know, we in government and as elected officials often hear health care providers and other vendors to the state say, I have great intentions. If you just give me more money, the world will be wonderful afterwards. But unfortunately, the anecdote of the two folks here and their efforts aren't borne out by the facts. In Oregon, there was what turned out to be a controlled experiment. There was a 90,000 member population of uninsured who could have been Medicaid eligible. They only had money to expand it up towards to 30,000, and that's what they did. So they compared the 30,000 that did get Medicaid to the 60,000 that didn't get it but could have. And what they found is that the cost for the covered group was 35% greater, but the health care outcomes weren't any different at all. That is not just an outlier study. The University of Virginia did a study in 2010, and it showed that Medicaid patients, it looked at 1 million surgeries, and it said Medicaid patients are twice as likely to die as those with private insurance. Their hospital stays were 42% longer. They cost 26% more. They were 13% more likely to die than the uninsured. This is a broken system. You know, recently, in the past year, the LRG Healthcare, which is the owner of Lakes Regional Hospital and Laconia and Franklin Hospital, said that they were getting rid of all their Medicaid patients. The way that Medicaid works is government pays half the costs and private insured pay the other half, because only half of the cost of these patients is paid by the government. The hospitals, the health care providers have to get the money elsewhere, and they go to private insurers. So if we expand it, taxpayers in New Hampshire are going to lose twice. They're going to lose when they have to pay more taxes, because the federal government will certainly back off from their promise. President Obama already said he was offering a blended rate during the sequester debate, already offered to back off on this commitment. So it's going to happen.
I had read that the White House now says it won't do that blended rate.
Well, it won't, because the sequester went in place. So it's a clear indication. Look, if the biggest champion in the country, Barack Obama, in the first time that there's a budget discussion, say, well, we'll back off from this, you know to a certainty it's going to be just like the federal government's promise to meet our special education costs. They said they'd meet 40% of that. We're at 17% now. It's not going to happen. Why don't we just put money out in barrels on Elm Street in Manchester? Be a better way to get money to people if that's all that can be offered as the reason to do this.
Well, and I know our other guests want to jump in on this. And Todd Bookman, NHPR's health reporter, did a report just this morning on that Oregon study that you mentioned. So I'm not sure if you guys want to comment on that particular study, but to you first, Representative Sherman.
In healthcare and in part of our training, it's to look at all the studies that we review very objectively. And unfortunately, you've been presented with only a small part of the facts from both of those studies. First of all, the Virginia study, which I already alluded to, and I really don't want to spend much time on this, but the Virginia study had many flaws, and it was looking at two separate populations. Second of all, the Oregon study looked at a 17-month follow-up, which is way too short in any healthcare-related study to look at long-term benefits of prevention. When we look at colon cancer prevention with colonoscopy, those were decades-long studies. But what it did show was that it showed that the financial status of the households that were covered was markedly improved. And the other part that is critical for our state is that we have a crisis right now in mental health. And it showed a clear benefit in terms of depression in these patients, even in the short term of 17 months follow-up. So it did not show any worsening. It was too premature, but it actually did show some benefits.
And if anybody wants more information, Todd's reporting is on our website. I know, Tess, you want to jump in, and then Senator Sanborn.
I do, actually. I was sort of reflecting on what Representative O'Brien was saying, and just the way that you're describing it is such a partisan issue, and healthcare is not partisan. You know, I think we need to really – these are people's lives that are hanging in the balance here, and we're puddling around like it's a football. That's really almost a pejorative way of describing an opportunity for us to really affect real people's lives. And with regard to the Oregon study, I think it's really unfortunate that people are selectively reading results to study just to attack Medicaid. We could fill this room with studies that demonstrate the value of Medicaid, and to call it a broken system is absolutely absolutely wrong. So I just wanted to make that state. I think that you spoke eloquently about the findings in the Oregon study. But for people who are low income, they had a reduction in their financial hardship, lower out-of-pocket expenses, reduction in their catastrophic expenses, and they had striking improvements in the depression that you had mentioned as well. But the lack of findings of the outcomes really looked at more of the lack of the power to detect the improvement versus the effect that that they were on Medicaid. And I also actually spoke with my colleague in Oregon about this study because, as I said, you know, the health centers across the nation see 20 million patients. We here in New Hampshire see about 125,000. And in Oregon, what he said to me was that of those patients, they likely were going to the community mental health centers and the community health centers. So they weren't not getting care.
They were uninsured.
Were getting care. And the uninsured are already in our system. They're already using the system. They're going to community health centers. They're going to the mental health centers. They're going to the emergency room. If you go to a health center or to a private practice, the cost of the visit is somewhere between $70 and $150, just in terms of a range. If you go to the emergency room, you're talking about $1,300. So it's what we're trying to do is create and build on a system that's actually done a very good job. New Hampshire has made investments as well into managed care. We have three companies that are ready, willing, and able to be able to manage the care that people have. They have high comorbidities. They have diabetes and depression and asthma, and they need access to care in order to be able to stay healthy and to reduce the overall economic impact onto the state.
Well, and that's a point that some have made. I want to ask you, Senator Sanborn, and then go to our callers who are waiting patiently on the phone. People are already in the system. They're already accessing care, whether it's paid for or not. And Representative O'Brien and others have talked about the impact of that uncompensated care. What do you think? Is that an argument for expanding Medicaid? People are already in the system accessing care. Why not get some of that covered?
Well, you know, Laura, obviously what you can hear from this is it's complicated. And when we talk about complicated, we're dealing, as we're hearing today, about populations of people with health issues. We continue to be concerned. Another part of it is the outcomes. Is the money worth it at the end of the day? Then we have to talk about the straight cost, as I alluded to. And then right at the end, we heard the hospitals play part of this game. So if the concern is that we're losing money on every single – if hospitals say, look, we're losing money on every single patient that comes in, but, gee, this is our opportunity to make that up with volume. You know, that's a mathematical improbability that if we're losing and we do more losing, it doesn't help us at the end of the day. You know, today, New Hampshire is fourth from the lowest in this reimbursement, and this is one of those considerations that we need to have with the expansion. We're fourth lowest. We get back 50 cents on the dollar. So if the federal government comes in and promise like they always promise and say, look, we're going to give you 100 cents on the dollar for this smaller universe. Remember, we're spending $1.4 billion today. This is $300,000. We're going to give you 100%, but at some point in the near future, we're going to start reducing that. How quickly does it come down to 50%? Shouldn't we be, and it's part of our study, shouldn't we be looking at things like looking to our federal delegation saying, get us back up to the statistical mean comparative with all the other states at 65 or 70%. And remember, at $1.4 billion, Laura, that's a lot of money. And we could do more good by taking a step back and looking at how we implement where the money's coming and going versus, again, as I had said earlier, just leaping blindly off into a program that, as Representative O'Brien says, we lose money on every patient.
Let's go to our callers, all of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Lots of questions and comments are welcome. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And let's go first, folks, to Jillian waiting in Hudson. Hi, Jillian. You're on the air. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi. You know, I've heard this argument about, well, you know, the federal government might change the law and make it less than 90%, but the Supreme Court has already said that this is entirely optional. So why don't we just you know, take advantage of this 100%, 90% that's in the law right now. And if something happens, we can leave. Additionally, you know, Senator Sanborn was talking about, you know, isn't there another way? Can't we get a block grant? But, you know, right now there's really these two options, either expand or don't expand. And I don't think it's really fair to New Hampshire's taxpayers to basically give away our tax money to other states. You know, it just seems like a really silly thing to do.
Well, these are two points that have been brought up a lot, Jillian, so thank you very much for raising them. And the first one to you, Representative O'Brien, and then you, Representative Sherman, she's saying, look, you know, let's take the money now, and if the feds end up reneging on the deal, we can leave. I don't know if we can leave.
Well, look, at Benjamin Franklin said that there's two certainties in life, one's taxes, the other's death. He hadn't lived in the modern era of American government because there's another certainty, and that's a program you put in place will never go away. Do you think if we expand from 68% eligibility, federal poverty level eligibility, up to, I think it would be 138%, 133 plus 5% set aside, that we're ever going to back away from that? It will be a financial disaster that we won't be able to avoid.
What do you think, Representative Sherman?
Well, again, I couldn't disagree more. When we look at the actual law as opposed to other quote, facts, close quote, that might be floating around. The actual law shows that or says that in the first 3 years we'll be reimbursed at 100%, and then it'll gradually decrease to 90% after 7 years. We have 40 years of experience with CMS and their reimbursement. We have
Center for Medicaid.
I'm sorry, that's correct. That's the funding for Medicaid as it currently existed, and there has never been a problem with that. Comparing it to education is apples and oranges. It's not a fair comparison.
To the special education law that a lot of
correct.
People use that as a comparison.
And when we look at ideas like Senator Sanborn's idea of some new blueprint, we actually already have a blueprint in place, which is Medicaid managed care. And this is a wonderful Republican-generated idea that has been implemented by Health and Human Services. It's a way of saving money, expanding care, improving quality, and this is targeting the Medicaid population. So were we to expand Medicaid and put it under Medicaid managed care, we actually already have a system in place to do that. And the final point is failure to expand Medicaid actually puts those three contracts at risk and will likely require that they have to be renegotiated. So there is a very dangerous or perhaps a big concern for many of us, the idea of not going ahead with expansion.
Well, yeah, definitely. Wanted to ask you folks about that Medicaid managed care. Some people say that's the elephant in the room. But to Jillian's question, because it's a good one, and I'm wondering if you know Senator Sanborn or you know Tess, can New Hampshire opt out? I mean, Senator Sanborn, could New Hampshire say after a couple of years, you know, federal government, you're not coming through, so we're not interested anymore?
Laura and Jillian, it's a great question. Again, one of the things we should study, which is why the Senate's proposing to look at this, there are some states that have asked the federal government to make that 100% funding commitment for 10 years. Other states have asked the federal government for a reaffirmation in writing, which seems to be difficult to come by, that says that the program's not working, can we get back out? I mean, obviously, it's a social, ethical, moral question that if you're giving away a bunch of free care, who's going to be the governor or legislature to decide to cut that back off? So it makes it very difficult, which is, again, why we kind of need to look at these different options. And quickly, the quick point I'll make to the representative is we don't have managed Medicaid today. It's still part of the budget. We've been unable to come to terms with the hospitals. In the Senate budget, we're kind of forcing the issue relative to another free medical benefit called uncompensated care. So it remains to be seen if it's going to be actually implemented, and if it is, if it's going to save the people money.
Did you want to jump in, Representative O'Brien, real
sure,
quick, and then you test? Yeah.
The simple answer is that Medicaid is a voluntary state program. Any state can withdraw from all of Medicaid. Is it a political possibility? It's a political impossibility. But in terms of the legal structure of Medicaid, any state can withdraw from
so
it.
So to Jillian's point, we could, but it's not likely.
And we're not about to.
Yeah.
And we do have a letter from the Secretary of Health, from the U.S. Secretary of Health, that does state exactly what you said, that we can withdraw.
Go ahead, Tess, and then back to our
say
callers.
That I actually agreed with Representative O'Brien. You're right. It is a voluntary, and we do have a letter December 10th on page 12 that says that states can decide when, where, and to get out. Thank you, Jillian, for the question. I wanted to get back to the sort of economic impact into the state. And I wanted to just give a sense of what the scale of $2.5 billion is over 7 years. And Representative Sherman talked about the 100% and then gradually to 90% and 90% for every quarter after that. So it would actually take an act of Congress to change that. But in terms of the $2.5 billion, we're actually looking at a budget right now, a biennium budget of $10.7 billion. That's over 2 years. So on average, our budget is around $5 billion. $2.5 billion over a seven-year period is half of the state's state budget, which is an enormous amount of money. $1 billion is $1,000 million. That's $2,500 million coming into the state, and that's actually already in law. And if we started in January of 2014, which we're eligible to, that's fiscal year 13 for the federal government. That appropriation is already there. So I just wanted to just give a sense of that's $85 million is what the state would have to put in over the 7 years. That's 97 cents of federal dollars to 3 cents of New Hampshire dollars. If you were in the transportation industry and they said we can fix your roads and bridges for 97 cents, we would be all over that. This is an enormous investment into the families of New Hampshire.
Let's try and take another call if we could. And let's see, this is Ye from Hillsborough. Go ahead, Ye, you're on the air.
Carol, I'm Carol from Hillsborough.
I'm so sorry, I had that written wrong. And go ahead, Carol, and welcome.
I think it's there's insanity to say that we're not going to take federal money to expand Medicare. I'm one of those 170,000 people in New Hampshire who has no access to affordable health care. I work 35 hours a week. I work with the disabled. It's very low pay, and I work with different agencies. So I have no access to workplace health care, and I certainly can't afford what the insurance companies are charging. I haven't had health care since, I think, 2003. I've just turned 50. I can't get my colonoscopy. I mean, it's just unbelievable that people are talking about, oh, it might cost the taxpayer something if the federal government reneges. You're talking about people's lives here. You're talking about people who need health care.
Well, Carol, thank you for calling in. And after a break, we'll pick up on that. I think that she's probably not right now poor enough to qualify for Medicaid, but under this proposed expansion, she might be. Thank you for calling, Carol. Sorry I got your name wrong there. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR, where support comes from. You are members. I'm from New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, keeping bodies in motion on the web at nhoc.com. I'm from University of New Hampshire School of Law and its Franklin Pierce Center for Intellectual Property, pioneering legal education for New Hampshire and the world at law.unh.edu. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
The Common Core state standards being adopted by New Hampshire are proving divisive.
I feel like this Common Core thing is just evil.
It is truly, you know, a unique document that we'll never see probably again in American education, certainly not during our lifetimes.
I'm Sam Evans Brown, NHPR's education reporter. Join me as I take a closer look at these new standards and what they mean for New Hampshire, our schools, our teachers, and our children. Catch my reports all next week on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and NHPR.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the debate over Medicaid expansion in the Granite State, especially that debate underway in the State House. As you've heard, the governor and the House like the idea of expanding Medicaid as envisioned by the Affordable Care Act. The Senate Finance Committee, though, cast doubt on the issue, saying we need to take more time to study it instead. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Representative O'Brien, just before the break, Carol called in and, you know, really upset, saying, look, you know, I'm working hard. I don't make enough money to pay for my own insurance. It seems like she was too wealthy, small w wealthy, to go on Medicaid right now. And she said, look, lives are at stake here. I just wonder how you respond to that human argument next to the budgetary arguments that you've made.
We have to respond to it understanding the full picture as well as specific opportunities. The full picture is that we have what amounts to an existential crisis in federal spending at this point. We have a $16.2 trillion deficit. We are running out of money, and we shouldn't be participating in the federal government borrowing $1 trillion from China and from the Federal Reserve to fund this program over the next 10 years. I've followed the debate in Georgia and Florida legislatures in which they're saying we won't be a party to this. Not every state is taking up this siren song of let's get some free federal money. It's coming from us, folks. It's not coming from Germany. We're the ones that are going to have to pay off this borrowing cost. Look, in terms of the idea that somehow or another we're going to expand into the area of covering more uninsured, we've done it. There's been two examples, Arizona and Maine, which expanded income eligibility under Medicaid recently. In both of those instances, the number of uninsured remained exactly the same. Arizona expanded it. It started off at 19%. It ended up at 19%. Maine did. It started off at 12%. Ended up at 12%. The reason for that is because you expand Medicaid, it draws people off of private insurance.
There's some shifting from private to Medicaid.
And that's exactly what happens. Now, we can talk about good intentions and what we think are going to happen, but that's actually what happens. I invite Carol to work with us to try to get rid of all the mandates we have as to what has to go into health insurance, and the costs will come down. Government has created this problem by putting over 1,000 mandates nationwide as to what has to go into health insurance, and now government's trying another big solution to the problem it's caused. Heartland Institute out of Chicago says that the price of health care insurance will go down 50% if we just get rid of mandates.
Yeah, and that's a huge issue that we've done multiple shows on, and it's part of this for sure. The cost is going up overall. Go ahead, Representative Sherman, and then I have a question for Senator Sanborn.
Really quickly, first of all, I'd love to get us back to Medicaid expansion. And one of the but the Arizona study, by the way, actually the expansion of the uninsured happened right in the heart of the recession. So it was more a reflection of joblessness than it was because of the recession than it was a reflection of expansion of Medicaid. The second component, which is most important in answering Carol's question, Carol is absolutely right. We heard hours of testimony about Representative O'Brien's bill, and the overwhelming majority were the working poor and very much dedicated to their jobs. And then when you look at national studies that look at the impact of just being uninsured, 40% increase in mortality solely on the basis of insurance status, 45,000 deaths annually in the United States solely on the basis of being uninsured. These are great studies. It's out of Harvard.
Well, and Senator Sanborn, I know, has to leave a little bit early for a meeting in the Senate, so I did want to ask you one last question, Senator Sanborn, and it's more of a political question. As we said earlier, the Senate Finance Committee has said, let's not expand right now. Let's study this. What do you think is going to happen in the full Senate, and then what happens from there?
You know, in the full Senate, we've obviously had a number of conversations about the expansion and what and how we should look at it, and we remain very committed to the concept of the legislature, and it's our responsibility to consider what we're going to do. And that's really what we're trying to do here, Paula. Laura. We go back to that cost thing again. In New Hampshire, we have the sixth highest spending on Medicaid today. We're spending about $7,700 a person. And when we look at other states like South Carolina that's spending half of that money, you know, we need to look and see why, and is there a better way we can do it? Which gets back to the question, as Speaker O'Brien had mentioned, do we block grant it? You know, part of that question we continue to have, there's about 62,000 people. That's the real universe we're talking about. And as we look at the ACA, Obamacare, and that's not our discussion for today, but a number of that universe, 35% to 45%, will be eligible for insurance underneath that. So again, we're driving that universe down under the expansion to between 20 and 30,000 people. In all in, it's about $370 million a year, which if you do the math, it's about $14,000. So nearly double what we're spending today, which again just raises the question the Senate wants to answer. You know, should we, and if we do, how, what's the best way to implement it?
All right. Well, Senator Sanborn, my last question, again, I promise, because I know you have to go. So if the full Senate says, no, let's study it, does this still become part of budget negotiations, or is it gone for this year?
Well, it's part, you know, right now we've made that.
Because the House has this in its budget, right?
Well, the House gave us their budget. And as we know, the governor starts with a budget. She gives it to the House. They put their fingerprint on it. The House gives it to the Senate. We put our fingerprint on it. So it's, at the end of the day, just one document. So we'll be voting on our budget on June 6th. I feel confident it's going to pass the Senate. So then we have to get back in the room and negotiate that one budget with the House. Our position obviously is, let's be mature, let's really consider this. Let's not say no, but let's consider it. And that will be part of the budget negotiations. And you'd like to think that the House is going to, you know, take a good, you know, aseptic look at it and say, you're right, we don't really have the answers today. So let's take a little bit of time and be mature about this and take a look at what the best way to implement it is.
All right. Senator Sanborn, thank you very much.
Laura, as always, thank you so much. And for all your listeners, I appreciate the time.
All right. That's Sandy Sanborn, again, a Republican senator from Bedford, chair of the Commerce Committee. He also serves on the Capital Budget and Health, Education, and Human Services Committees. Let's go back to our call. Callers, if we could, again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Karen's calling from Concord. Hi, Karen. Thanks for waiting. You're on the exchange.
Hi, thank you. I have a kind of a two-part question. One is Senator Sanborn and Representative O'Brien have both talked about borrowing money from China, and I would like to hear from the other two of your guests to see if that's true, because my understanding is that the Affordable Care Act does not add to the deficit. And then if I could just go ahead and ask the second one, I just am wondering why, if we get 100% of funds from the federal government for the first 3 years, and Senator Sanborn feels that we should study this, why couldn't we study it during those 3 years? And then if we have, you know, some really good solutions, then there wouldn't be this moral ethical problem in making a change.
Karen, great questions. Thank you very much. And to the first one, maybe, Tess, it's kind of a political and health-related question.
Right. Thank you, Karen, for the questions. And I think it gets back to what Representative Brian was saying, is that we're all really concerned about the deficit reduction. So when Congress passes any bill, they actually have to have it scored by the CBO. And this bill was scored. Its CBO is a nonpartisan, very well-respected institution. They scored the ACA that it reduced the federal deficit by $109 billion by 20. And the Urban Institute actually did a similar study that state government spending would be reduced somewhere between $90 and $120 billion in that same time period. And even after 2020, the states would be out ahead of this. So if you take that into New Hampshire, so that's the federal side of it. But if you take it back to New Hampshire, when I was talking about the 97 cents to the 3 cents, so of that $85 million that it would cost over the 7 years, the Lewin study actually noted that it would be net savings because there are a number of offsets. State corrections was $21 million offset. The Cypress Center had some offsets. The Medicaid premium assessment would have some offsets.
What does that mean, Tess? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what does that mean, have offsets?
So there would be savings. So what we talked about is the entire cost to the system. So there is a cost shift when somebody that's uninsured shows up in any of these places. That resources has to come from somewhere, which is really many ways why our insurance, not only just the mandates that you talked about, Representative, but why our insurance is so high, because the providers have to find the resources somewhere.
I see.
So with all those offsets together, the net savings to the state would be $43 million. So I'm not sure that the thought that, you know, that we would be overly spending New Hampshire taxpayers' dollars would be accurate here. And we are a donor state. We send more money to the federal government than we actually bring back. And that $2.5 billion is not just going to appear to New Hampshire. If we don't take that money, it will not come to New Hampshire, and it'll be going to other states.
So that was a point that Jillian raised earlier that I wanted to ask you about, Representative O'Brien. I can see you want to jump in. Representative Sherman, too. So in your response, Representative O'Brien, I know you want to comment on the deficit question that our caller asks. But a couple people have called or emailed and said, look, other states are going to get the money. Our tax dollars will be sent to those states, so we might as well get it ourselves. Go ahead, Representative O'Brien, and you too, Representative Sherman.
Well, first of all, on the fact that there's some a cost savings from Obamacare, that basically started when in Obamacare there was an assumption without any direction on how to achieve it, and it won't be achieved, that we're going to take $500 billion out of Medicare, the health care program for the elderly. They said, well, you know, this is part of the law, so the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, had to score it as a savings. It's not going to happen. What is going to happen is exactly what Senator Max Baucus from Montana, the finance chairman of the House, a Democrat, has said. This is going to be a financial train wreck. Now that it's passed, now that Nancy Pelosi can read it, it's becoming apparent it's going to be a train wreck. And, you know, and I have to tell you, in all due respect to the Lewin Group, its study was paid for by healthcare providers. And we can go into the specifics of where there were errors in that, but it doesn't demonstrate that somehow or another there's going to be a cost savings. All we hear is that somehow or another this is free money. Let's take it. It's an ineffective, dangerous way to take money because the health care outcomes are going to be worse for Medicaid patients.
That was disputed earlier, that health care outcomes were worse for Medicaid patients.
Well, it was disputed, but you know, what we have is, oh, I don't believe the Oregon study, or I don't believe the Virginia study. And so what we have to hear is you don't believe the Journal of American College of Cardiology that says you're 50% more likely to die during coronary surgery if you have Medicaid.
What they don't believe is the Journal of Cancer, which says
you're 2 to 3 times more likely to pass away than other patients if you're a Medicaid cancer patient. We can keep on saying, I don't believe it, bad study, but those are the facts.
Go ahead, Representative Sherman.
First of all, I do believe the Oregon study. It actually does provide us with great data, but you have to look at the whole study. And that's part of our training when we become physicians, is to look at studies and vet them. But getting back to Medicaid expansion, the bottom line is that this is a large population of our residents. When I went into healthcare and throughout my career, my devotion has been to what's best for my patients. In this new part-time career, it's what's best for the residents of New Hampshire. The Lewin Group was not funded by providers. It was funded by a nonpartisan, nonprofit commissioned through the Department of Health and Human Services. So the Lewin Group is a very careful, nonpartisan effort to look at the effects of expanding Medicaid to the state. And the point I would make is that for both the health care of the state, and again, health care is really, I mean, can you imagine if we could put partisan politics aside and actually approach this with the idea that we can't afford not to do something? So what are we going to do? And we're presented with an opportunity using our own tax dollars. And that opportunity will enhance the health of the state at no actual long-term cost to us.
We've talked a lot about the Lewin Group, and we've done other shows on this. We're going to put the Lewin Group study on our website so we can set it aside for now. And believe it or not, we really only have just about a minute or two left. And Tess, I did want to get a thought from you. Senator Sanborn, earlier in the program, was talking about, let's study this. Let's not do it now. Mm-hmm. Let's study it. I wonder how you feel about that as somebody who, in general, supports the expansion of Medicaid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. I would agree with Karen. She said that there's no reason why we can't study it at the same time. And every day that we don't take the money is day that the people that are uninsured actually don't have health care coverage. So I think just to get back to the human side of it, you know, Karen called in, Jillian called in, Carol. I mean, these are people who really need our help. And we are at an important healthcare crossroads right now. We can choose a path to a healthier, more productive population through insurance coverage and access for low-income, hardworking families in New Hampshire, or we can go on the path and maintain our status quo of having 170,000 people still uninsured. And so when I think it gets back to, and I'm actually also a provider, I'm a nurse by training, and that's what drew me to nursing, was this just being much more compassionate about healthcare. And so economics aside, which I actually agree with the Lewin study, whether you do or don't, I agree with the Lewin study, but I think this is really about human capital. This is about our friends and neighbors. This is about the wait staff, the janitors, the bus drivers that I mentioned earlier, the construction workers, the landscape folks. These people need our help.
What other options, Representative O'Brien, are there for those folks, if not through expanded Medicaid, those people that you know, who have called and who test sites?
We need to block grant Medicaid patients payments. What we need to do is to have New Hampshire solutions that look at where the problems are and don't assume a federal solution is going to fit New Hampshire just like it fits the other 49 states. Can I respond to some of what is said?
Actually, we're running super close to the end.
Okay, no.
I do apologize for that. And you got 2 seconds, Representative Sherman.
My 2 seconds are, this is a New Hampshire program. A block grant is not going to happen. We are going to lose money for every day that we don't accept Medicaid.
Okay, and I think we need to follow up on this with another show, because we all had a lot to say, and we'll definitely be looking at this again. I really appreciate you folks coming in this morning and talking to me. Representative O'Brien, thank you very much.
Thank you for discussing this.
Representative Bill O'Brien, Republican representative from Mount Vernon, and Representative Sherman, it's good to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Tom Sherman, a Democrat from Rye. He's also a practicing physician, and Tess Stack Kinning, it was good to meet you too. Thank you.
Great, thank you, and thank you to the listeners.
Tess Stack Kinning, Executive Director of Bi-State Primary Care Association. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our interns are Faith Mikesell and Catherine Muzzy. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.